A warm welcome back once again to Lost in Postulation. I am Neil Fitzpatrick and I'm joined once again by Nicola Volpe, fresh from his 1 week suspension from all broadcasting from the BBC.
Yes, it's good to be back. I'm going to have to control myself. The BBC putting their nose in places they shouldn't be bowing to the demands of the Tory backbenchers.
That's all they're doing. I was shocked that they reached out to us, but there you go. They were they had enough. They said, you need to stop. You made your demands. They backed down, and here we are back.
I'm not neutral enough, apparently.
You need to really tone down the opinions. That's it's not okay for a broadcaster to have opinions.
Not allowed.
That we're very much not in the ethos of what the BBC would be about. I don't think we can expect a call from them anytime soon.
Right. And especially opinions coming from a place of compassion. I mean, that's
beyond.
We don't need that, right?
Beyond acceptable. No. Yeah. But geez, Gary Lineker. Yeah, he had a bit of a rough week, but there you go.
I think it didn't even last a week. I think it lasted about like the weekend, basically.
Exactly.
And then
backtracked.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was our thing for the weekend. That was our news cycle of the weekend, right?
Exactly.
That kept us going. It was great. Good drama.
Exactly. Thank you, BBC.
Thanks as ever. But here we are, and we are back once again with another hot set of postulations. Didn't say the T word there. And I am.
What we were thinking for this episode is we became quite curious in the lead up to the Oscars about, you know, what's actually all of this coming from, right? Because what we started to notice, what started to become abundantly clear is that the Oscars are actually a lot more about business and politics than about the actual craft, right?
100%.
And when you start peeling back the layers of the onion, what you find out is when the Oscars originally started, they weren't yet the Oscars, but the Academy Awards, they started actually as a response from the studios to organized labor, to unions, right?
Yeah.
So essentially what they did, as there was more and more chatter about screenwriters, actors, actresses, directors forming unions, they essentially created these awards. Because everyone likes and deserves recognition, right? With the caveat that if you were part of organized labor, you couldn't participate.
It's just so jaw-dropping that they got away with that, because it's the type of thing that today...
That's the 20s.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you imagine dropping that today, the absolute nightmare they would get from a PR standpoint, like the industry would get. It's unheard of. And of course, the union, the industry itself now very heavily unionized, the Screen Actors Guild
Absolutely.
And others like it. So like it hasn't really worked in its core aim. But then again, just the brazenness of it is you have to just respect it, if nothing else.
Absolutely.
It's shocking.
And ironically, many years later, do you know who was one of the presidents of the unions that ended up being Ronald Reagan himself?
Oh yeah. The actor?
Yeah. The actor, Ronald Reagan. It's morning again in America.
Oh, yeah.
So, having said that, what ends up happening, they start giving out these awards, they have a few gaffes, they start making it more dramatic by having the envelopes, not revealing what happens, and they really start to become, one, an event, and two, a validation and a thing.
Mm.
To which these studios who set them up start seeing an opportunity to maximize their profits, because awarded films provide for a better ROI on, let's keep in mind, what are always very risky investments.
Yeah.
Especially when we're talking about making big budget films. So it's kind of this virtuous or vicious, interpret it how you will, cycle, where they give more and more attention to these awards. They make them bigger and bigger because it can help secure future success, while also not being bound to unions, right? So the studios here, the creators, but also, you know, the winners of these awards. So it becomes, you know, this certification for the studios, because it is a serious indicator for talent. Talent sees those are the studios winning the awards. It gives me a better chance to get an award myself if I go and collaborate with that studio, right? So that's quite obvious. And though also it's a serious indicator for viewers, as said, because what the data shows already from way back there is that we're much more likely to watch something that has won an award or at least be nominated.
100%. It's right back into like evolutionary biology, tribe theory, where it's like, if we see other people like something, we're going to really try and like it.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately.
And, yeah. it's always funny with something that is actually so subjective, like art, a film, wine, right? Where you can love a film and know just about as much about cinema as me, and I can totally hate it, and nobody is right or wrong. But because of that, we need to simplify things, and we need someone to make it seem objective, hence the award.
I agree to like 90% of the way with you. The only point I suppose to make is there is also some objectivity to film where it's like, this is just bad. Like, this is not, like, there are films that are badly made. And I do also think there is like a realm of goodness that you can point to and not really disagree with, where it's, you kind of have to say this is well shot, directed, edited, written, whatever. I do think there are some factors that are not totally debatable with, but I'm not saying that it's like, I'm not saying we all have to love the same thing, but I do like how the Oscars, at least for me, gives me a shortcut to knowing stuff that's broadly good. Like, nothing is going to be absolutely dire.
They narrow it down for you. And I think we know a bad, horrible movie when we see one. You know, it's a very different thing to what is a great film versus a good one, right?
And that's subjective.
I think that's where it becomes subjective.
But amazing.
So basically, let's just dive into some of this data, because then you'll see what ends up happening from the 80s and 90s onwards. So an actor can have more than a 20% boost on average for their next pay package if they take home a Golden Statuette or have been nominated for one.
Is that recent or historical?
Like, that's historical.
Yeah, because I feel like it's probably
now it's even more.
Way more. Yeah,
absolutely.
I feel like, for the example, Paul Mescal, right? Relatively unknown Irish actor who now has taken away a Best Actor nomination. He can just name his price, I think, from here.
I think so,
he
absolutely.
He can pick his project and just say, I'll do it for this much. And
him and Austin Butler are going to be able to do that for the next 25 years.
Exactly. It's like, in many ways, a lottery. It's like a golden ticket, this thing.
Yeah.
So 20% to me is like undercalling it dramatically.
Probably. Well, and any increase stays with you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Also,
It's relentlessly cumulative, as Jim McVitie would say.
It is until it isn't, though, because look at Brendan Fraser, look at Kay.
You're out.
Yeah, exactly. Suddenly the industry just says, yeah, we don't like you anymore. And then forget about that paycheck. Like The Mummy, let's say, you know, I don't think he was getting The Mummy style paychecks for the last 10, 15 years, unfortunately.
No, and also not for The Whale. I mean, it's an A24 production, right?
Like, he may never see those numbers again, in fact. Although he has been very vocal, just to jump back to the present day, he has said that he's well up for doing another Mummy movie. So let's see. But
let's see. Yeah. And a more than 200% earnings boost for just nominated films.
I love that. I think that's more reasonable. Like, you're basically tripling your was it revenue or profits here? Sorry. Earnings, profits. Not at all
bottom
surprised.
Line.
It's just with great power comes great responsibility, though. And like, look what you can do to somebody's life, to the producer's life, if they end up getting nominated on a whim. It seems almost it's crazy. It's life changing stuff to hear.
So in light of that, what ends up happening if you're running a studio, it starts to become all about campaigning.
Yeah,
and that becomes more prevalent than critiquing. It's like in a lot of political elections, it's not so much about the substance of your policy proposals, it's about your powers of persuasion.
Unbelievable. This part is so great to me. Like, that's the part that I don't have an image in my mind of what it is, really, like this campaigning as such. I know that they go on talk shows and the actors show up and stuff. That's part of it. But I'm sure there's a lot of other, behind closed doors campaigning.
Yeah.
Do you have any insight into what that is?
Or? Well, there's a lot about parties, glad-handing, returning favors. Some of the most classic examples are The Monster of a Man, Harry Weinstein, for Miramax in the 90s, where you saw Shakespeare in Love win an Oscar, which it definitely shouldn't have. And what they put that down to in the industry is that it was so much down to the campaigning. Mm-hmm. I mean, it beat Life is Beautiful and Saving Private Ryan, which it had no business in doing. But basically what they did, it was they made a movie, they produced it, it came out. And in the meantime, between when it came out and when that Oscars nomination list came out, and then when it was Oscars night, they did everything they possibly could, ad buys, influencing the voters. And I think a big part of it is a lot of the voters are just like, hit me with it. Mm. They're not coming in with any principle of I'm going to vote for a movie that's like this or that. So it kind of, it feeds the beast in a way.
It is eerily reminiscent of the FIFA stuff with the World Cup, right? It's that kind of level we're talking here. I mean, you don't want to call it outright corruption, but then again, it's like favors for favors, you know. Or right. It feels a little bit icky, to be honest. Yeah.
So, I mean, on the other hand, we should be happy that, you know, the nominees are usually still good movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then it's an absolute, you know, it's sausage making from there.
It's open season. Yeah. Although, like, if I was to compare what parts of this whole world I have problems with, the campaigning part is only my second least favorite part of it. My number one least favorite part is the part that comes before that, which is the actual conceptual Oscar bait process.
Right.
When I imagine some production company or group or studio or whatever sits in a room and goes, I'll tell you what's really going to give us the Oscar, war movies. Or like, you know, they start to, the creative process starts to be funneled down the tube of what's going to get us an Oscar here. And to punch a little bit my new favorite punching bag, The Fabelmans is exactly that type of movie where I honestly, it winds me up. I'm getting annoyed just talking about it. The freaking Fabelmans, where every scene you're like, you can just see Spielberg in his head being like, oh, I'm so getting an Oscar for this. Like, it's all just like pure, isn't this so emotional? Isn't this so moving, guys? Aren't you feeling really sad now? Oh, isn't it sad how I got bullied in school? Like,
poor Steven.
I mean, I don't feel any sympathy for Steven. He's doing fine, okay? Like, I'm sure he did have a difficult childhood. Yeah, it's sad if your parents divorced, but like, okay, don't make a movie about it and then expect an Oscar for it, because no, it is a terrible movie. Sorry, I hated it. But didn't mean to dump on the Fabelmans too hard there, but the point was more that movie and many more like it are guilty of not so much the campaigning part, which I can take or leave, but also just from the word go, basically, from the start, they seem interested only in making a film that's more likely to be voted for various Oscars,
right,
which I really have a problem with.
And that isn't necessarily always good for creativity. Sometimes it is when you gauge the polls that they want something different at the Oscars, as I think it was this year, probably.
100%.
But on the other side of the coin, it actually reminds me of season 5 of The Wire, where journalism becomes all about what's going to win us a Pulitzer. And, you know, not 100%. So much around following the beat and reporting and necessarily, you know, the tricky investigative part of it. So, yeah.
It's unfortunate, but I get the economics of it. And, okay,
that's the driver.
Yeah, and would I rather have an Oscar-baity movie like The Fabelmans or another sequel to a Marvel franchise? Both are relatively low-risk investments. I think I would rather have The Fabelmans there because, like, the last thing I need is just another sequel, basically, to things that are going to make money but just aren't going to be interesting at all. But neither are great, really.
Yeah. And so that's a bit, you know, diving back into the history and seeing what it is, then the natural next place to go is how often do they actually get it right? And the litmus test for this for me is looking back at previous Oscars, nominations lists, talking about Best Picture here, and seeing which ones are we still talking about today and which ones that maybe won that just aren't on our radar at all.
Yeah. I mean, there are some incredibly egregious examples who won Best Picture. I'm looking forward to getting into them because it genuinely beggars belief, some of these. But
do you have one in particular that you want to throw out?
The classic one is, like, not that it's bad actually, but just that it had zero impact on us, which was The Artist, really. That The Artist.
I knew you were going to go. Yeah, 2011.
Yeah. So The Artist, like, was an amazing concept at the time, and people flocked to it. Actually, it in the list of, like, lowest grossing Best Picture winners, it's actually relatively low down. Like, it did pretty well at the box office, but it seems like everyone just, like, got collective amnesia about that film, and it never ever ever comes up in any conversation. I've never met a person who said, oh, do you know what my favorite film is? The Artist. Like, it seems to, even people who saw it and liked it forgot about it instantly.
Yeah.
And it won Best Picture, and then everyone patted themselves on the back for giving Best Picture to a silent movie, and then straight on to, and again, it was up against movies like Moneyball, which we still talk about all the time.
Aaron Sorkin script.
I mentioned it even proactively in the Everest episode.
He gets on base.
Exactly. So, like, that is a movie that has had an impact, and of course, no, it didn't win Best Picture, but geez, The Artist, like, so bad. Yeah. But what I've done now is I've jumped straight to a more recent example. And there's plenty from history, too. But are there any that you in particular wanted to call out?
Well, while we're there, you know, in the recent past, I think we can already evaluate 2009. The Hurt Locker beat out Inglourious Basterds.
That's
Quentin Tarantino's masterpiece.
That's a head scratcher, that one.
Especially for this podcast.
The only thing you can say positively, though, about The Hurt Locker is that it was the first female winner, first female director to win Best Picture.
Right.
Catherine Bigelow.
Right.
So,
But did she win Best Director?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
It was, I'd have to actually double check.
Yeah, we'd have to check that.
I'm saying it with some certainty, but maybe we should double check. But in any case, what we can say for sure is she was the director who won Best Picture for The Hurt Locker, right? And Inglourious Basterds, we've talked about. I love it. Absolutely. You do it too.
Absolutely.
We think it's...
Gets better.
Gets better every watch. It does. We love the work of Christoph Waltz in that film, as we've talked about in episode 6. Go back to that one, and listener, if you haven't. It might intrigue you.
Especially Austrian listeners.
Yeah, definitely check it out. But that aside, I saw The Hurt Locker and thought it was like extremely meh and just forgettable and average.
I never watched it again.
Yeah,
I
never will.
Sure, but
I think it was cool. I like any movie that gives you an insight into something you otherwise don't know about. So Bomb Disposal, it's like an interesting thing, you know, but it builds up in the classic Hollywood way to the big, is he going to explode finale? And, you know, very, very predictable movie, but glad to see it was a stepping stone in that sense of like, we had Parasite winning, which was the first international film to win. And I think The Hurt Locker falls into that same history of being the first something, something, you know, the first,
a potential watershed moment,
yeah,
but not necessarily about the film,
not about the film at all. And certainly not a deserving winner of Best Picture. No.
Should we, do you want to introduce your favorite from 2005?
2005 is, what a stacked year. So before we talk about the C word and get into it, like Brokeback Mountain, which you have to remember, it was 2005, you know, like, I know it seems reason enough, but this was a very different time. Like I was 14, 15, where at that point, that movie came out and was a big old joke for everyone of that age. You know,
right.
14, 15.
Yeah.
Gay cowboys, hilarious, you know? And so, that movie still, because of how well it was made, how sensitively it was made by Ang Lee, the music is incredible for it, the acting phenomenal, the story brilliant. Like, there's so much you can love about it, and it works all the way.
Star-studded, too.
Star-studded, of course, and brilliant performances from Jake and... from our man, from Heath.
Heath Ledger.
Who put in one of his best performances of his career. But
Anne Hathaway.
And yeah, also. And Michelle Williams. Sneaking in the background there, yeah.
Unreal.
Still putting in great performances to this date, the Fabelmans notwithstanding. But I think the point is there you have a Best Picture, a deserving Best Picture winner. And it garnered the Oscars garnered a lot of critique for not giving it to
right.
Brokeback. Because honestly, the only argument you have left is... are you guys just homophobic? Like, are you not okay with this subject matter? Because there's
probably at the time they weren't.
This is what I'm
as
saying.
Okay with.
I think that's what I'm getting at is like if Brokeback Mountain came out today, I think it would just be a lock. Like it would just be an instant win.
Well, what they say is they corrected for the Brokeback Mountain snub, and this really isn't how the Oscar should work, but it is by awarding Moonlight the Oscar.
That's unfortunate because Moonlight speaking like. Like The Artist, Moonlight again is one of those films that who's talking about Moonlight really? Like, has anyone excitedly told you, do you know what you have to watch? You know, like,
exactly.
Never. So, Brokeback Mountain, obviously the deserving winner, but Capote at the same time, same year. Equally deserving, you could say.
PSH, man. Rest
now,
in peace.
Yeah.
Also.
Talk of a guy you can go to YouTube and just Google him and watch any clip from any movie, even bad movies that he was in. Harvey Wilson's War, I think he was in, or like he's done these like bit parts where he just smashes it. Like he never misses. Basically,
even in Talented Mr. Ripley, he was just this absolute dick of a guy, and it was fantastic. Yeah. I think if you go way back, he was in Scent of a Woman.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, he's
he was one
up
of the
all
kids
over.
In this. I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman. I think we lost what I'm gonna say. What could have been the best actor of his generation.
Yeah, it is just got taken way too soon. He had 40 more years of films in him potentially or something along
Absolutely.
Those lines, right? 30, let's say.
I mean, but, so talented.
My God. Yeah. And even in the kind of action movies, Mission Impossible 3, he does an unbelievable job. He's just like everything he's in, he's absolutely smashed it. So there you go. Another person who could have carried his movie to Best Picture success were it not for Crash. Just what happened? Like what?
Unbelievable.
Did the world ever get to the bottom of like what happened? How did this happen? How did this film win?
I think it was from a thematic perspective. that it won, because it touched a bit at a time when Hollywood wasn't getting as much into it on race relations. Mm. But it didn't do a very good job of that either. Horrific I think job. There's plenty of films even before that that did a much better job. I mean, give Spike 4 Oscars before you do that, right? Mm. No, but watched it once, never went back. I mean, Ludacris is in it.
Yeah, he's not an actor.
I mean, I love Ludacris, but he's not an actor.
Yeah, it's a horrific movie. Yeah. And it's so bad that I can't even say why it's bad in a way, because I watched it once, hated it, and have kind of deleted it from my memory since. Yeah. But I'm still confident enough to say that it's an absolutely dreadful film. All I can really remember about it is that the film spends 2 hours just saying racism is bad, and then shows you that 10 different ways, and then goes, isn't that sad? And then in the end, the white guy saves the day and it's all good. Like, it's very quite bad as films go. Yeah. And the fact that it won Best Picture is just it beggars belief, honestly. But here we are. So I think your question was, do they get it right? The answer is no. They honestly often don't. And I think that's okay once you accept that, because to me, where the Oscars are more handy and more interesting to me is the nominees list, actually. That even just to look at the nominated films for Best Picture, you can be pretty sure that if you go to see one of those, you're not gonna feel like it was a wasted evening or a wasted trip to the cinema or whatever. And that's probably where I most highly value the Oscars, actually. When it comes to the winners and losers, I'm like, well, whatever, you know, like you guys pick whatever, but I'm happy.
Yeah, we give it a lot less importance, I think. For example, than when I was a kid, I was genuinely like, that one won the Oscar. Yeah. Oh my God. Right. Whereas now it's kind of like, give me the nominees list. I'm going to watch them and I'm not really going to watch the show.
No, I never have. I've never watched them live. Never probably will. Like I Googled the results after and I'm happy with that.
Yeah. And you know, having said that, I'm just going to throw in one last one of these out there, because or else the listeners will come for us. 1990, Kevin Costner's Dances with Wolves beats Goodfellas. Goodfellas, Neil.
How is that possible?
Goodfellas.
And didn't Joe Pesci win Best Supporting Actor for am I confusing?
Did he win it for that or Casino? Well, anyways, it didn't win Best Picture.
That's just outrageous, though. Yeah. And I wish I had seen Dances with Wolves so I could give a proper informed take on this, but
it's not a bad movie.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Goodfellas is iconic.
Yeah.
I rewatch it every year, basically.
Something about it, there must be something political here, or making a stance against organized crime, or something like. There must be something more to this than just pure merit. You know?
It was the like in Sopranos, the Italian American Anti Defamation League.
Yes,
that stepped in.
Absolutely. Tony wouldn't have stood for that. I'll tell you.
No, definitely not.
Absolutely.
You know, so we've talked there. Now, when we talk about, you know, what are your favorite films? What are great films, etc. You know, we often. The implicit assumption is that truly great films age well, right? Like a great wine, if you will. I'm not really a wine drinker, but you know that's what you hear.
Understand that that's
I understand that that's what you should. You always hear that was a great year, for wine, right?
A vintage,
but you don't hear that in the year it happens, right? Because it's
too soon.
Yeah, it's too soon. So here's my postulation, and here's my proposal to you: what if we awarded the Oscars for Best Picture for a given year with a 5 or even 10 year delay? Would the winners be different? Would campaigning be less or more important? And would some things that won previously maybe not even get nominated?
It's a phenomenal question, actually. And it's funny how I can already see I can say exactly why it would never work. You know, unfortunately, sadly, is that it's too smart an idea. This is too clever. Like, your idea requires too much intelligent people to be involved in the Oscars for that to work. Because just think about it.
And it's probably not as lucrative.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Zero. Like, it's too logical. It's too sensible for the Oscars to do it, because there's not enough money behind it. That isn't going to, you know, pay for somebody's next house in the Hollywood Hills. So it's not going to work, right? It's an amazing idea, I think. The only downside, I suppose, is that the films that stay relevant are sometimes because they're very, very good, and sometimes because they kind of tap into some kind of meme potential or some aspect of pop culture that it just happens to align with. Mm-hmm. A bit like how we talked about in the One Hit Wonders episode. Sometimes things last not because they're particularly great, just because they come along at a time when we're interested in that particular thing. Mm-hmm. So I think the only issue is, if we were to say award for 10 years ago, so we'd be back in whatever it is, I don't have the list in front of me, but if we were to look at the 2013 Oscars and then pick the winner. It's likely, I see you're going to potentially pull them up. Let's see.
Let's do it.
Yeah. But it's likely, my postulation there is that the films that we think about and say, oh, that one really lasted the test of time, it isn't necessarily because it's just great or enjoyable. It may just be because it's more relevant now than it was then, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I'm going to bring these up here now, and you're going to award Best Picture.
Okay, let's do it.
So here are your nominees. I'm not going to say who won, but I think you know who won. Mm-hmm. Amour, Beasts of the Southern Wild, Django Unchained, Les Misérables, Life of Pi, Lincoln, Silver Linings Playbook, Zero Dark Thirty, and Argo.
That's a terrible year. Sorry.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
That's pretty dreadful, honestly. I would give, and I've even said on this podcast, I'm not a fan of Django, but I would give it to Django in that list because Argo is just an absolute disaster. I'm surprised.
You really didn't like Argo.
Hated it for the same reason I hate The Fabelmans. Just it's like pure, like, let's go America, woohoo, firing my AK into the air. You know, like just. Or I suppose it should be AR but rather than NAK. But yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, I do know what you mean because I was in Cincinnati, Ohio when I went to see Argo.
Mm.
And at the end of the film, everyone stood up and clapped.
0% surprised by that.
The same thing happened for Top Gun Maverick.
I'm sure it did. You can see there's a trend coming out here. And I'm not anti-American, by the way. I love the country, loved its culture even. But I just don't particularly like this particularly cynical approach to filmmaking, which is like basically propaganda. And if we're going to talk about propaganda, when we talk about, say, China or Russia, I think we should equally talk about propaganda about the US because films like Top Gun are propaganda, basically. They are, like, if we're going to tie them by the same brush, you know.
Recruitment,
so, like,
for the Navy after the original Top Gun skyrocketed. Like, exactly, there's numbers on it.
And if we're okay with that, then so is Argo, right? That, like, Argo is a savior piece for America where it paints the Americans in a much more favorable light than I think was truly the case, and that Canada had an equally important role to play in that operation in Iran. But apparently that's not how the film turns out. And it's, anyway, not to get too much into Argo. That wasn't the point of this exercise. No. But I think the what is the point here is Django of that list is the one that clearly stands the test of time and has remained way more influential than Zero Dark Thirty, than Argo, than any of the others from that. Even Silver Linings Playbook, I think, kind of fell off the face of the earth a little bit.
I liked Life of Pi, Ang Lee. Heartwarming film. I'm not saying Best Picture, but I'm just heartwarming.
I think it was badly timed or something, or we weren't ready for it, you know? It's a great book, I think, if I remember right.
Yes.
But, yeah, but it just wasn't, we weren't ready for it, I think. Or we weren't interested right then. Yeah.
Well, thanks for indulging me in that little experiment. But Neil, why do we still care? Why do we still do an entire episode about these Oscars? And why are we going to do it again next year?
Well, I think it all comes back to what we said at the start for me. It's not about the winners. It's about the nominees. Mm. And for me and for many people, what the Oscars serves as is simply a shortcut. That's it. In this day and age now, when our attention is being fought over by myriad sources within our phones, within our lives, we just don't have time to be experts on every single film that comes out. We need reviews. We need things like that.
Yep.
And the Oscars is like reviews of the reviews, basically. It's like rounding up the good films. And I've now watched, as between us, we've watched, I think, most of the Best Picture nominees, as we said.
Yep.
And I don't think any of them, apart from The Fabelmans in my case, were like a regretted experience. Like, we've enjoyed, I think, all of them to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Except for you hated Everything Everywhere. But
I'm like, should I give it another chance? Because so many people saw something in it that I didn't. Right?
And
so,
also, good art can also be argued to make you feel something. And you felt something there, too. It was just very, very negative.
I did also during The Whale on Sunday. Yeah, like, that was...
Another emotional piece, right? So I think... I'm never going to be the person who sees every single film that comes out and, you know, has an opinion on all of them. When I do go to watch a film, I want it to be something good. And for that reason, I really appreciate the Oscars because it gives me a chance to just narrow down the field, pick something that I know is going to be reasonably good, and also, important, become part of the conversation about these films. Like, take part in and read what other people have thought about it and form my own opinion on it. But I think for that reason, I'm a fan of the Oscars, actually, that despite all of the negative parts that we've mentioned in this episode, and actually we've been pretty, we've been pretty harsh, or let's just say at least fair on the Oscars.
Yeah.
But I still think, all that said, they're a worthwhile thing. And I don't love it. I don't necessarily love celebrity culture generally, but I do think they have a positive role to play in my understanding of film.
Yeah. So net positive from your perspective.
Exactly.
I think, look, ultimately, one thing is that I think recognition, validation, celebrating masters of their craft, I think that's a must. So we need something, you know, like we also have in sports, we have MVP awards, we have, you know, Ballon d'Or awards, whatever. So we need something to celebrate the achievement. Now, is it imperfect the way it is now? Absolutely. But still, I'll leave you with this. There is nothing, for better or worse, that is more influential to the movie-going experience and to our understanding of Hollywood than the Oscars.
100%. I have to agree.
That's it.
I mean, there is nothing. I mean, what even comes close awards-wise? I know we have the EGOTs, you know, between the Emmys and the Golden Globes and the Oscars and whatever, but I do think the Oscars just has that little extra special space in the average person's mind, you know, in their awareness. And it's interesting you use the word Hollywood there at the end, by the way, because one of the interesting directions the Oscars have taken recently is to look a bit more internationally. And True. That does go beyond Hollywood. But I think you use the word judiciously in the sense that it is still very much an inward-looking beast, right? That
Absolutely.
They're here to celebrate themselves and they will do a damn good job of it, first and foremost. Their films do it too. Films like Babylon, even The Fabelmans is like a celebration of, hey, look how great we are, Hollywood.
Even Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, you have to give it to them. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's still a very Tarantino-y film, but it is still also introspective to that extent.
Yeah.
But all of that aside, I think we can easily level a lot of complaints at the Oscars as we have done, but I think you and I agree actually that for better or worse, they're here to stay, they're relevant, and they do matter.
Exactly. And to the listener that's still here and saying, couldn't they have just led with that 40 minutes ago? The answer is no.
It's a journey. It's about the journey.
Exactly. It's the postulative journey. We're going to take a break and we're going to come back with another quiz extravaganza. Welcome back, listeners. Here we are. And we are going to end this episode with our first ever head-to-head quiz showdown. This will be a duel where we will both attempt to answer each other's questions and hopefully not get embarrassed.
I like this new format. Previous quizzes have led to my utter embarrassment, so I like how we get to share the load here. This is good. I like this.
And did you come prepared?
As prepared as I could be. I'm not like one of these gotcha quiz makers who like makes questions that have a possible right answer, but then it's actually wrong. You know, like these are all fair questions, I think. So I don't feel like I'm gonna be unfair to you here.
All right.
I hope you can say the same.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Do you want to lead with the first question of this Oscars quiz extravaganza?
Yeah, I think so. The first one is a numbers question. So what is the record for the most Academy Awards won by a single movie? And I'm asking for the number here, and it's multiple choice, so you get a shot here. Is it A, 11, B, 14, C, 17, or D, 21?
It is A, 11, Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King.
Now, interesting, I wasn't asking for any movies. Great that you mentioned that one, but there's actually two others. And those are Ben-Hur and Titanic, funny enough. So that was my question one. Correct answer for you, sir. Okay. So give yourself a point.
There it is. First point down. Now, Neil, to match me. Italy is the country with the most wins for best international foreign film feature with 14. Which country can lay claim to second place with 12? Now, you have multiple choice.
Okay.
A, Spain. B, France. C, Germany, or D, South Korea?
Oh, was it wins or nominations, by the way?
This is wins.
Ooh.
Italy with 14 and in second place with 12.
I think it's got to be France.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
You lock it in?
Lock it in.
France with 12 is correct. 1-1.
Yes. Had me going with South Korea there for a sec. I was a little bit worried.
But, and you already, you got, no matter what, you'll have 1 out of 5, right? That's a passing grade in Ireland.
No, not quite. Not quite. 40 is the passing grade. Okay. So once I hit 2, then we're talking. All right. Well, let's jump straight into question 2 for you, sir. And it's a follow-up from the previous question. So we talked about Ben-Hur, Return of the King, and Titanic. So interestingly, all of those films did win 11 Academy Awards, as you correctly identified. But of those three, which film had the most nominations?
Ooh. Well, you would think it's the newer ones because there's more and more categories. So that would rule out Ben-Hur, because I would say Lord of the Rings and Titanic are like at a 5-year interval. I want to say like Titanic was really, really a milestone, and that was nominated the most times.
That is correct, sir. Oh. Now, it is an interesting one. They're very close. So Titanic was 14, Ben-Hur was 12, and Return of the King has the notable achievement of winning every award it was nominated.
11 from 11.
Clean sweep. They literally couldn't have done better if they tried.
It's unreal.
Now, what is interesting, as I was making this, was like, which is the more successful film there? Is Titanic or Lord of the Rings, right? Would you rather be nominated for 14 and win 11, or be nominated for 11 and win 11? That is the question. Now, that is not a quiz question, and we'll move on, but it is just an interesting reflection nonetheless.
Wow, that's unbelievable. I wonder if we'll ever get there again. I doubt it. Yeah. Well, 2-1, but you have your second question coming up.
Sure do.
You ready?
Think so.
This is not multiple choice.
Damn.
Name me 3 actresses that have won Best Supporting Actress, not including this year's winner, Jamie Lee Curtis.
All right.
All time.
You have the full list there, yeah?
Yeah, I have an extensive list, and then if we need to check, we need to check. But I think I have all the ones that you would know.
Now, it's one of those situations where, because there's so many answers, your mind just goes completely completely blank.
Best Supporting Actress.
Not including Jamie Lee Curtis. That would have been a nice freebie. I feel that Judi Dench has won it.
Dame Judi Dench has won it.
Mm-hmm. So that's one. I also feel that Margot Robbie might have... No. Anne Hathaway has.
Let's check. Anne Hathaway has won it.
I just need one more.
One more.
Gee, it's actually hard because there's so many. So you're just like, where do I even start? Literally name an actress. Can I lock in Margot Robbie? Yeah, pretty sure actually from Quentin Tarantino's movie. Yeah, let's lock in Margot Robbie.
Margot Robbie for
Once Upon a Time. No.
No, I don't have Margot Robbie.
What?
I don't have Margot Robbie on the list. We can run a quick check with our friends.
You might be
at
right.
The Academy here.
I may have a black hole in my mind where...
I think she's certainly been nominated, but Margot Robbie...
No.
Has never won an Oscar Best Supporting Actress.
I feel
she's
like she
received
kind of...
2 Academy Award nominations.
Yeah.
One for Best Actress in I, Tonya, and another for Best Supporting Actress in Bombshell. But nothing for a Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, one. My God. Sorry. That's, really showing my ignorance there.
Wow.
Jeez.
But you did well. You got 2. You know what? I think you deserve half
a point.
That's
a passing grade in Ireland,
Should
yes.
we give you half a point?
I think I'll take a half. Yeah. I think that's more than fair.
Plus a half. Do you want to know some of the other options?
These are the type that I'll be kicking myself. Yeah.
That you would know Maggie Smith, Whoopi Goldberg, Penelope Cruz, Renee Zellweger, Kate Blanchett, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Jennifer Connelly, Angelina Jolie, Meryl Streep.
You see, I didn't want to say the big names like Meryl or Kate because I was like, maybe they actually haven't, you know?
Right, they jump straight
I
to
I wanted to go
lead.
for supporting, but then it's actually very hard. Jeez, but good question all the same.
Yeah. The Oscars seem to really be a pay your dues thing to where they start you off at supporting and then lead.
Yeah, you rarely win lead. As in, like, to win lead, you need to have almost won supporting, it feels like.
Exactly.
With a few exceptions, as we've seen.
Exactly.
But in any case, on to your question 3, which is all to do with grossing films, how much they've made.
Mm.
Which of these Best Picture winners was the lowest grossing film? So here we go. 4 options. Is it Birdman, Spotlight, Crash, or The Hurt Locker?
Ooh.
Lowest grossing.
Bias would say the older ones are higher grossing.
Oh, these are adjusted, by the way. So these are not like-for-like numbers. These are in today's money.
Okay.
So all of these are adjusted for the same amount. Yeah.
I guess that's fair.
Yeah.
My favorite film, for what it's worth, from those is Spotlight.
Mm.
I'm going to say the lowest grossing was Birdman. Michael Keaton.
You're not
also with Michael Keaton.
Lovely. Love the film. Probably my favorite from this list, but no. Actually, that one was the second lowest of that list.
Was Spotlight the lowest?
Nope.
Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker by a mile was
lower
the lowest.
Than Crash. Get out of town.
Hurt Locker seems to have like turned people away at the door because they made $17 million in total. And even the others on this list, Birdman, $45 million, Spotlight, $47 million, Crash, $69 million. So like Hurt Locker was truly the worst of the worst when it came to grossing Best Picture winners.
Wow.
And I mean,
$17 million?
17.
And it wasn't a small independent film either. Wow.
It didn't break the top five or even the top 10, I think, in its opening weekend for films. It was really truly ignored. Maybe things like that didn't help it or were things like it being called the Hurt Locker, which might have turned a lot of people off. You know, and also right. It doesn't tell you anything about what the film really is. But in any case, geez, so you have missed that question, unfortunately.
Wow. Yeah. So it's 2-1.5. Nice. So you have a chance now with this third question to take the lead in the duel, Neil.
Love this.
In 1998, James Cameron's Titanic won Best Picture.
Mm.
Which plucky upstart debut screenplay took home 2 Oscars on that same night? One for Best Screenplay and the other for Best Supporting Actor. Now, I don't just leave you with that. Here is a tagline of the film.
Okay.
Wildly charismatic, impossibly brilliant, totally rebellious. For the first 20 years of his life, blank had called the shots. Now, he's about to meet his match. Let me know if you need repetition of the first part.
Because
there's some clues in there.
1998. One Best Screenplay.
Best Screenplay and Best Supporting Actor.
And Best Supporting Actor. Yeah.
Lucky upstart debut screenplay.
I'm sure I know it, but I'm really, really struggling.
And the blank...
Yeah, is the name of the character.
Is actually, in the title of the film. I have said a lot.
Supporting actor. But not others. No other awards. Debut screenplay, 1998.
Best screenplay and best supporting actor.
It's tough.
One of my favorite films.
Can you give me the hint one more time? The kind of tagline for the movie?
The tagline? Yeah. Wildly charismatic, impossibly brilliant, totally rebellious. For the first 20 years of his life, blank has called the shots. Now he's about to meet his match.
Oh.
I think you get more from the first part than from the tagline.
Yeah. This is terrible audio for the listener because I wish I could get this.
He's pulling his hair out.
I literally and metaphorically really wish I could get this. And it's going to really kill me, but I'm going to have to pass actually because we just have to move on. Yeah.
One of my favorite films, Good Will Hunting.
I wasn't going to get it wasn't anywhere even close. I was thinking along the lines of Liar Liar or like The Matrix or like, I was just like really pulling from like the depths of my 1998 memories, but no, I wasn't going to get that. So
best screenplay written by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck themselves.
Wow.
And best supporting actor to the late great Robin Williams.
Of course I'm sure a lot of listeners got that, by the way, so well done to them.
Well done to the listeners who are probably beating us both at the moment because it's 2-1.5.
It sure is. I hope we pass this quiz.
At least by Irish standards.
Exactly. Here's the next one for you, sir. Bit of an odd one. I'm asking for who, and I'm going to tell you it's the best actor winner, which Oscar acceptance speech included the phrase, and I quote, "My mom, my dad, they had sex." You have 4 options here. That was said in an Oscar acceptance speech for Best Actor. Now,
and you know that's word for word.
Yes, okay. I've actually seen the clip.
Okay, so there's another similar one that.
No. Yeah. I can guarantee this one is legit. The 4 options you have to choose from are: number 1, F. Murray Abraham, who from The White Lotus actually is a Best Actor winner.
Armand from The White Lotus.
No, not Armand. F. Murray Abraham was the granddad
in Sicily
in season 2. Yeah. So. That's your first option. Number 2, Anthony Hopkins. Number 3, Daniel Kaluuya. And number 4, Casey Affleck.
What was the award?
Best actor.
In a leading role?
Yes.
Kaluuya didn't win it. He's also too young for the Academy. I know Affleck won it. I know Hopkins won it. F. Murray Abraham. And I know Dustin Hoffman said... thanks to my parents for procreating or whatever. Mm. But it was a bit more, sophisticated. You know what? I'm going to go Casey Affleck.
Let's pause the process because there has been
for Manchester by the Sea.
There has, well, what I can tell you with some certainty is that that's not the answer. What I can't tell you with any certainty. No, I'm right. I'm right. Yes. Oh, okay.
This is great podcasting.
Yeah, we may cut. We may need to chop that section. So let's get you. Let's cut back in here as if you you just said it. So Casey Affleck is your answer.
Casey Affleck is my answer. From Manchester by the Sea.
Incorrect. Although he did put in a great performance, the correct answer is actually Daniel Kaluuya, who won Best Actor for Judas and the Black Messiah. Yes.
In a leading role.
Yes. I have it here. Under good authority.
It was that year when
the Academy Award for Best Actor went to Daniel Kaluuya. His speech was extremely long, wide-ranging, quite unhinged in some respects. And it was very nice, most of it. And then just towards the end, he's like, guys, my mom, my dad.
No, they had sex. Get out of here.
It's hilarious. It's on YouTube. So
Daniel Kaluuya, good for him. I love the guy. And now I love him even more. He's a winner.
There you go. Well, he's a winner. And a winner in the speech writing category as well. That is.
Well, guess who's definitely not a winner? It's us in this quiz.
No.
We're just thrashing each other.
Exactly. We did not pull any punches. So over to you.
Are you ready for your fourth question?
I'm ready as I'll ever be. Yeah.
I am a person. I have been nominated for 3 Best Picture Oscars. Sorry, for 3 Best Actress Oscars. Mm-hmm. And I have won all 3.
Okay.
I won my first Academy Award in the 1990s on the same night that my husband was also awarded an Oscar for the same film. Who am I?
Now, I think I know who this is, but her name is escaping me. Can I finagle my way to half a point by mentioning the movies?
You can mention the movies and do them as yes or no questions if you want.
Yeah, because I think Fargo is the movie. No?
The film is Fargo, Neil.
Exactly. Now, can I somehow conjure her name from my mind? Because I obviously see her in front of me. I know she won it for Nomadland and 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri as well.
Yes.
Frances McDormand, yes.
It is Frances McDormand pulling that out of the bag.
Ah, that was buried wow. Too deep in my subconscious
there. And she is married too?
Yeah. I don't know. No, William H. Macy. No, surely not. Who won the Oscar?
Someone that directs with his brother.
Joel Cohen.
Yes.
Fantastic.
She's married to Joel Cohen.
Amazing work. He did the right thing.
Great for both of them.
Amazing. She, speaking of acceptance speeches, she's had a good one too.
Yeah.
See that one? Inclusion, yeah. Rider. Have you seen that?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
Google. She's great.
She is.
Shout out to the Coen brothers from St. Louis Park, Minnesota.
Delighted I got through that one, actually. That would have been quite heartbreaking.
You have taken a lead, 2.5
wow.
to 2. And I only have 1 question left.
Yeah. I think you'll be okay at this. Well, let's see.
It's your lead to lose.
Which of these is the only movie in this list to win both Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress? So there's been a few movies who have done that in history, but this list I'm going to read you, only one of them has done it. Now, Everything Everywhere All at Once has just done that, by the way.
Right.
So I've dug a little bit into the other films that have done that.
Oh, that's a great show.
So here we go. Number 1, Shakespeare in Love.
Gwyneth.
Indeed. Number 2, The Fighter. Christian Bale.
What were the 2 awards?
Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress. So the 2 female categories, okay, for acting. Number 3, Million Dollar Baby. And speaking of 3 Billboards, number 4, 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Look, I mean, what was the first one?
First was Shakespeare in Love.
I can only remember Gwyneth from Shakespeare in Love. From The Fighter, I know, I'm quite certain Laura Dern won it for Best Supporting, and I want to say maybe Amy Adams won it for Best Actress. If I would get that right, that would be a great shout. Certainly they were both nominated. I don't think Amy Adams has ever won an Oscar, so I'm going to take that one out. And then short-term memory loss here.
Million Dollar Baby, next.
Hilary Swank.
Indeed.
I know that, but don't remember anybody else.
And then 3 Billboards, the last one.
Look, Frances McDormand, but I don't remember anybody else. Process of elimination, coin toss. I'm going to go with 3 Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. Mississippi? Missouri?
Missouri.
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 Missouri for you, sir, because that is the wrong answer. I'm sorry,
I didn't even
sir.
See that film.
It's good. It's one of the better Martin McDonaghs, actually. Yeah.
Oh, I liked it. Yeah. Martin McDonagh.
Yeah. Banshees of Inisherin, man himself. But unfortunately, it was Shakespeare in Love, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Judi Dench, who I mentioned in your question for supporting actresses.
Ah.
So, in fact, you did have a chance to catch a glimpse of that one.
Smalls.
I know.
Judy.
But fun question all the same. And that's an interesting one to get into. What films have won, you know, both actor and actress, or they've won actor and supporting actor? There's actually quite a short list.
Right.
In fact, there's only three films, I think, that have won actor and supporting actor. It's very, very rare that they would do that. So anyway, those were my five.
Wow. Well, you know what that means?
Final.
You've won the quiz.
That's beautiful. Now I get to take a victory lap.
Two and a half to two.
I can get this one dramatically wrong and still win. That is pretty fun.
You want to hear the last one?
Absolutely.
Before your victory lap?
I do.
Neil, who was the first Canadian director to win Best Director? A, Denis Villeneuve. B, James Cameron. C, Steven Soderbergh. Or D, George Lucas.
Is this a trick question? Are any of these men not Canadian?
That would be
so lucky.
Take it easy. You won the quiz, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Don't hit a man when it's done. Let's go with Mr. Lucas.
Mr. Lucas is American.
You see,
he was not the first Canadian director to win Best Director.
This is why I said, is this a trick question?
Steven Soderbergh is also American.
Oh, cool. That would have been my second.
There are two Canadians in this list. Mm. Denis Villeneuve, who I assume is Quebecois.
Yeah.
And Jim Cameron.
Who was the first
to win
Best
Director. And it was quite late. It was 1998 for Titanic.
Yeah, jeez.
And he's still making films.
Did Villeneuve got it for Dune or... Am I misremembering?
He didn't win.
Oh, ouch. Okay.
Yeah, I just threw him in because he was Canadian.
Good question, all the same. I love these trick questions.
How about that?
Yeah, well, 2.5 to 2. It's
congratulations.
It was close, if nothing else, yeah.
And that was the Oscars for this year. We will be back next week, listeners. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter. That's at Impostulation. Email us, lostimpostulation@gmail.com. And take the polls for all of you listening on Spotify.
Talk to you next time.